The following program is an abridged audio version of the streaming video talk show, A Wonderful Chaos. The hosts are Andy Chaliff and Bambos Dimitriou. The format is entirely casual, unscripted conversation. If you'd like to watch a live taping or participate with your comments in real time, subscribe to A Wonderful Chaos on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, or Twitch.
There is definitely a complete disparity between the value that people bring to society and the money that they get paid for that. It's almost exactly the reverse, that the less value you bring to society, like the stock traders and the people like that, or politicians, the more money you get. And the people like the cleaners or the burger flippers, yeah, the people who actually really are doing valuable stuff for society, they get the least. You know, it's absolutely, totally on its head. It's ridiculous.
It's a wonderful chaos. Beautifully random, messy and glorious.
Solo or tandem?
We work to find rest and fight to find peace. Both head and the heart,
like a nephew and niece.
What are we doing here?
You mean listening to this show?
Where the more that you learn is the less that you know. Where the wounded are healers
and the atheists pray.
It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way.
Today we are on with
Colin Turner, guys.
Colin R. Turner.
He's supposed to be a very important book writer.
No, don't. Colin has written and he's done incredible projects. When I would say projects, he's done websites for social change. That's how I would articulate. If you look for him on Google, it'll call him an Irish activist. And we're going to talk to him about future economies and how we might transition to get there. And we're going to do that on
A Wonderful Chaos.
Yes. So I went downstairs yesterday after the show.
Here we go.
And Ronnie looks at me and says, Andy, are you open to feedback?
And did you say fuck you in your judgment?
I said, when anyone starts with that, I'm like, oh no, what's it? And she says, the way you sit in the chair, you're slouching.
Yeah.
And you look like you're not like, you're way too comfortable. So now I've got a pillow behind the small of my back.
I'm just going to pinch you if I see
you slouching. And now I'm sitting up as if I'm actually very active in this process. Yesterday I was very casual in the chair, just really enjoying myself. I'm like, why can't I just relax and enjoy? Why do I have to act like I'm very active on this thing, you know?
Well, you're talking to activists.
Yes, in that case. So today we have one special viewer out there. I know there's others watching, but there's one special viewer, and that is Bolalong, who joins us every single episode. If you haven't watched an episode, then you haven't seen Bolalong.
He's missed one.
He's missed one, but he apologized for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bolalong, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago says, you got to have Colin on the show. You got to have Colin on the show. And then he sent me links to websites that Colin had created. And I love the sites. One was called ShareBay. And what it is, it's where it says enjoy free goods and services and share free goods and services. So it's basically just doing the obvious, right? Like if we lived in a world where we were just fully present with our strengths and said, hey, let's just reciprocate. I'll offer you my services. You'll offer mine and so on. Then that would be a world we'd all want to live in. But we don't live in that world. We live in a transactional world. So he created a website, which you can go there right now, ShareBay, and you'll see how easy it is to offer your services online and to support or to take up the services of others online today.
Nice.
So that's ShareBay. And then he has HonorPay, which may seem a bit weird, and yet it makes all the sense in the world. And when Bolalong, who we mentioned just a second ago, when he watches this show, he's been appreciative. And how do you show appreciation today? Is there's a lot of different ways to show appreciation. But one of those ways is to honor somebody on the internet, to show that you've appreciated what they've done or what they've given you or how they've supported you.
Yeah.
So the currency on HonorPay is honor. So you simply go to HonorPay, you find a person that you want to honor, you type in their name. If they haven't already been honored, then you add them to the system. And then people then get to share their testimonials of what this person has meant to them and how they want to honor them. So you build up honor.
So are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. You can go there and honor me as well.
I'm going to go there and honor you.
And I thought that was really sweet because at the first thing you think, oh, this seems a bit crazy. But then I was utterly touched because I thought, wow, if there's a place which is not my website, not a place where I'm control of it, so I can say who says what and how, but an independent place where people can state what they feel about me. I thought that was really cool. So that's what I really appreciate. And if you look at it, it makes all the sense in the world because what's our greatest currency? Our greatest currency is the testimonials of others. And what do? We basically curate those testimonials today. So we say, hey, can you write a few nice words for me? Well, how is it when people get to write those words independently because they feel compelled to do so? Wow. So that was really cool with Honor Pay. But independently of that, he is an activist. And he's written 3 books. And all of his books, I mean, I just gave you the titles. The Open Economy, How Everything You Know Is Going to Change. It's a real uplifting book about the future and joy and happiness of continuing what we've always done. F Day, The Second Dawn of Man. I don't know what F stands for, but if it was...
I'm assuming it's fuck.
With an ED. We'll ask.
So without further ado, Mr. Colin Richard Turner.
Vamos. Hey, how are you doing, my friend?
Better than most.
This is nice to see you. So anything I said bullshit about you in the intro? Or is there anything you'd want to correct before we continue?
It's all completely wrong from the whole lot. An excellent summary, really, of a couple of things that I've been doing, a few things that I've been doing. And gosh, I'd like to get you onto my PR team someday. Yeah. That would be fantastic.
Unfortunately, that's in my blood. Yes.
I've done a lot of things, really, a lot of things we can talk about, cover a lot of ground. But I mean, happy to talk about the things that you've mentioned there, ShareBay and HonorPay, which are really... things that are really important for me, ShareBay most especially, briefly, because obviously I've been, for many years now, I've been sort of exposed to the idea of a money-free, post-money world, post-money society. And I've been thinking along and those lines and writing things like that and making videos, blah, blah. Mm. And one of the things that really struck me about the movement in general was that even though the ideas were nice, there was no possible way of enacting it or making it real, I suppose. So it's always this kind of like fantasy movie type of scene, this idea. But everyone wants to know, okay, that's great. Yeah, that's a lovely idea. But how do we get there? How do we do that? Blah, blah, blah. And so I suppose I was kind of forced in some way to kind of come up with this idea of ShareBay. I'll say, well, look, if we're talking about a world where people are, happily giving goods and services freely with each other, then, I mean, there's no reason why we can't do that now, even in a small way, in like a miniature prototype, I suppose, the best way to describe it, So that's what I consider ShareBay to be, is a kind of very, very small prototype for a potential future economy where we are giving and services and goods freely with each other. And ShareBay can potentially provide the proof of concept for that, I suppose. So that's really that's why I put a lot of importance on that particular project. I mean, I've done several different projects like the Free World Charter and HonorPay and Open Access Economy and stuff like that.
The idea that you translated something that you knew intuitively had to happen and then you figured out ways to show it, to demonstrate it, is really what I find to be fantastic. Because how many people, me included, discuss that this economy cannot continue the way it's going. We just know resources are going to be at some point scarce to the point that there'll be an implosion of some sort. But we always leave open the future of, and whoever knows what it's going to be, but it won't be what it is now.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a big problem, I think, for activism in general. Is most people basically agree that what we're doing now is not sustainable. We can't keep doing what we have been doing for the last 50 years, and so everyone kind of says, let's stop doing that. But no one said, well, what the fuck are we going to do? I mean, don't tell me what we're not to do. What are we to do? And then some people say, well, look at look at the Venus Project and the resource-based economy, look at the Zeitgeist movement of natural law, resource-based economy, and these are good ideas. These are fantastic ideas. But again, they're just ideas, you know? So everyone says, okay, that looks nice, but how do we do that, you know? Some years ago, I kind of came to the opinion that really, that the idea of a resource-based economy, which maybe the Venus Project would promote, is something that is, I think it takes a lot, it takes too much for granted that people will behave in a certain way that will enable that to happen, or that people will have the right incentives. Intentions or incentives to actually make that work. But I think that that's possibly a little bit too much to hope for, because at the end of the day, our economy is about how we behave as individuals and our expectations of our life, you know, and we all want to have very nice houses. We maybe want to drive cars. We want to wear nice clothes and all that sort of stuff. When you multiply that out by, you know, several billion people, it becomes like this massive, unsustainable monster of a thing. And to try and translate that into this kind of, I suppose, like communist utopia or something like that, it just doesn't seem to translate. So my thinking is that we have to start working on ourselves as individuals to start changing our expectations and to changing how we expect to give and receive things. You know, do we always want to work for money? Do we always have to pay for things? You know, I mean, we have to sort of break down those ideas gradually, I suppose, you know, little by little. Maybe ShareBay can help with a little bit of that. You know? It's great to see a lot of people offering services on ShareBay, which is really good. You know, I think that's fantastic, you know, because sometimes it's not that practical to offer goods, you know, because people might not be in the area or they have heavy goods or whatever. But a lot of people are offering services like proofreading and computer support and stuff like that. So it's really cool.
Yeah. It's amazing. Because when I look at like the future, I have a dim outlook for the future. Like I really feel like we can't come to a point of enlightened self-interest soon enough. It'll be imposed on us because our surroundings will force a change in behavior, as opposed to change because we know it has to happen. Otherwise our future will be in disarray. So what I love, and again, it speaks again to giving a glimpse at what the future could look like if you got enlightened enough to see that everything else isn't going to work.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if you read the F Day book. The F Day book is kind of it's a novel, it's a fictional piece which describes how we get from here to there in a sort of in a step by step thing, which is obviously not exactly how it's going to happen, of course, but it gives a sort of a plausible path, you know, which I think is interesting.
I'd love to hear a bit of that, by the way. Like what's the transition look like in that book, and how does it unfold?
Sure. Okay. I don't want to give too much away, otherwise no one will buy my book. No, but I think most people know it. Anyway, basically what happens is there's an economic crisis happens in one country, in a small country. And it sort of precipitates, the president of that country is somebody who has become a fan of the idea of a money-free society, you know, and he inadvertently drops a comment in a press interview and in the middle of an economic crisis, and suddenly everything turns up on its head and all the banks the people start running on their money and all this kind of stuff. So the economy basically collapses and people are left searching themselves to say, well, what are we going to do now? You know, and the president says, well, look, we still have this idea and we can try this. And it begins with let's go out and do the work that needs to be done for free. And let's make sure everyone gets looked after and all this sort of stuff. And of course, people are kind of reluctant and skeptical. But then one guy, sort of a hero guy, sort of steps up and he's working in the local electricity plant. And he says, okay, well, I'll go to work Monday morning and I'm happy to keep working and for free and that sort of stuff. And other people join in and that sort of stuff, you know. So, and then of course it spreads from one country to another, you know. So that's kind of how it's unfolds. But, you know, it's a kind of a thought experiment of such, and it was kind of an interesting experiment for me as well, just to try and flesh out the concept.
Colin, how did you stumble into this subject? Like, where were you in life
Yeah, that's interesting. I had a business for about 15 years. I was in the CD and DVD duplication business, something that kind of you wouldn't even hear of now. And I did very well on that. And before the financial crash 2008, I'd wanted to sell the business anyway because I knew the writing was on the wall for CDs and DVDs. That wasn't going to happen forever. So as luck would have it, I sold the business just a few months before Lehman Brothers collapsed. And so I managed to actually escape with quite a few euros before the whole bottom fell out of the world economy, after which I wouldn't have sold it for 2 cents probably. Hmm. So anyway, I was lucky in that regard. And I had the time to a year or 2 years off. Basically, I said stop working because I had been working nonstop. So I said I had money to take time off and research into different things. And this after the crisis in the world crisis or the economic crisis, there was a competition in Ireland because the economy was so bad that the president actually set up a competition saying, well, look, anyone got any ideas? More or less was his idea. And so I entered a few things in that. You know, it was all about sort of stimulating the economy. These are kind of the ideas I had at that time. And somebody, I think, must have been from the Venus Project, actually also entered that competition and said, well, let's have a resource-based economy in Ireland, you know. And they were doing pretty well because obviously the TVP guys were click, 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 clicking on this thing, you know. And they were later disqualified actually for gaming the system.
Oh, yeah.
But of course it was good because a lot of people read about it, and it was my first time reading about the Venus Project and the resource-based economy. So it was very interesting. I thought that idea was very attractive. I wrote something called the Free World Charter then about a year or so later, which was like defining sort of 10 basic commandments, I suppose, for that kind of world, how it would operate. Mm-hmm. And but from there, I mean, I've been blogging and talking over and back about it for basically 3 years. But in the last few years, my patience has worn thin with just constantly talking and pontificating. And I wanted to actually do something that works. And ShareBay is working. And it's really, really tiny on a global scale. You know, it's absolutely minute, but it's working, you know, and it's like, I don't know, I think 0.001% proof of something working is still better than 0% of just a fancy idea. So I'm very proud of that it is actually is making a difference in a very small way. If that's if we can just get a bunch more people on there and a lot of more things happening, then who knows what could happen.
So we need to share ShareBay.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You went from a capitalist to an activist, right? That in this story, like, what was little Colin like before that turned him back into this activist? Because there has to be something in your background that made this like an injustice or something isn't right here. Like, what was that?
Well, spotted Sherlock. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there has. I'm first and foremost a musician. I'm a musician and songwriter, and that's what I've been doing probably since I was about 10 years old. I think over years, when you're a musician and songwriter, you always kind of think, right, you're going to be famous. You're going to have songs out there. Mm. You're going to have songs in the charts.
Mm. And you're
I tried. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I tried all that. I tried and I tried and I tried and nothing fucking worked, basically. So I think, I don't know. For whatever reason, anyway, that sort of opportunity was kind of denied me, but it did leave me with a kind of a little bit of a bitter aftertaste, I suppose. From my own personal point of view, there was a little bit of a sense of personal injustice. But here I was, I had invested a huge amount of time and energy as a young kid, and I got shag all for it, basically. If my skills are not being recompensed in the world, you know, there's obviously, there's something wrong with the world, you know?
Yeah. This is a sad part of life, is the more you see how the system runs, you see that it's really rigged in so many industries that the chances that you have are already, which is why parents are the first ones to tell their kids, we don't want you. Like yesterday we had an artist on and his parents were like, and even now he's successful in his endeavor. His parents continually ask him, you know, listen, when are you going to get a real job? You know, because just artistry is not a real job, right?
There is definitely a complete disparity between the value that people bring to society and the money that they get paid for that, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's almost exactly the reverse. that the less value you bring to society, like the stock traders and the people like that, or politicians, the more money you get. And the people like the cleaners or the burger flippers, yeah, the people who actually really are doing valuable stuff for society, they get the least. You know, it's absolutely, totally on its head. It's ridiculous.
Mm. My wife works with stocks, right? She's in finance. And it's really nice because I also have my accountant on, Raul, who made a comment that we'll get to in a moment. And we took a taxi back the other day. And he said in one of his side remarks, like, you know, these hedge funds add no value or offer nothing valuable or create nothing for society. And I'm just sitting there smiling like, oh, that's going to hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, but so we all got to do what we got to do. But I mean, and when you look at the bigger picture, the people who do the least get the most, and the people who do the most get the least.
Stated.
You know, I think it's fucking tragic that people who go out cleaning houses, you know, and they're going like 10 or 12 hours a day working their fucking ass off just to get a tiny little salary that's just to pay their debts and their credit card loans and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, this is real hard work stuff, you know?
I've often thought that the change would have to happen with a big calamity of sorts. Like, I couldn't see anything other than a calamity, either on an environmental scale or a nuclear war, which is created because of scarcity of resources or scarcity of water, and then people needing to go to war to fight to try to, like,
COVID.
I would tend generally not to agree with that. I think a large calamity, a big calamity now of any sort will, with the chaos, with the wonderful chaos that will come after, I think it will still eventually coalesce back into more or less what we have now, because mm-hmm. that's what people expect. That's what people are used to. Mm-hmm. So for example, if all the supermarkets close, for example, without further notice, and all the banks close, people are going to be, still, they're going to be looking for leadership. They're going to be looking for somebody to sort the problems out.
Mm.
And eventually that pressure for people to sort things out will eventually lead more or less back to the same thing we have, I suppose. And a lot of our problems, I think, are this kind of this over-reliance on leadership, over-reliance on basically other people to solve our problems for us. Mm. You know, and I think that's one of the underlying problems of having this type of economy now, is that it makes us very, very over-reliant on people. And we have to learn to become self-reliant, to become more autonomous, and to learn how to fix our problems for us. And even, I mean, consumerism really is what started in like the 50s, 40s and 50s, has really just, it's created a culture where we just expect things to be done for us. Or maybe we have to pay for it or whatever, but things come to us. We don't really have to make them happen or worry even how those things happen. We don't even have to worry about how a car is made or how the stuff gets in the supermarket. We don't even want to think about that. So we've sort of abdicated even thinking on effort on those things. And I think the same thing applies with government structures. And now is that we almost outsource our thinking to government. You know, when shit hits the fan, we say, oh, it's fucking government's fault. No, they made this happen. They helped make this happen. But we never take responsibility for things ourselves, or we never look to thinking about, well, how do we solve this ourselves? You know, how can we do this ourselves? So I think that maybe our mindset is not right yet to survive that kind of a calamity like that and not go into a different type of scenario. Could be wrong, of course, but
no. But what you say is really a strong point, and I've thought about it a lot. Is the system? It's like, you know, Einstein. You know, I say this a quote a lot, and I don't even know if it's right because he's been attributed so many things that weren't his to begin with. But a problem can't be solved in the context in which it's been created. Mm. So if you think about it, when the problem happens, whatever it is, and then we go back to the source who wasn't able to solve it to begin with, that's the context, which is the problem. And I think the hardest thing, I basically decided at a very early age that I wasn't going to vote. I was in the US and I said, I'm not going to participate in a system, which I have now been, you've got two choices and we call that freedom. I said, from a very young age, I never felt this to be freedom. And I said, by voting, I've basically agreed to the system. What if I don't agree to the system? Like, what happens to me then? And in a way, what you're saying is that what does a system look like that isn't something we've already lived the last 100 some odd years, right?
Exactly. Yeah. We just don't have the cultural tools, I think, for being more autonomous and being more self-reliant than we are. I mean, I would favor, I mean, to answer your original question, how would we move into that kind of world? Would it require a calamity? I would think it would be more of a gradual change, gradual shifting from one. I mean, and I see that happening now. I see that we're already very slowly graduating towards that. I think, you know, a lot more people are becoming eco-aware. Greta Thunberg has had a great impact, actually. I think I really have a lot of respect for her. She's kind of bringing this, bringing the conversation to the dinner table, so to speak. And I think it's with the eco-awareness, and obviously, as you said earlier, with this underlying feeling that this can't go on, that what we're doing is just not sustainable, then obviously people are hunting out solutions, and there's lots of solutions out there as well, not just the sort of stuff that I'm proposing, but like there's another crowd proposing a thing called a well-being economy, which is also a good idea. It's not a money-free economy, but it's still a good idea. Or there's like donut economics, which is proposed by a lady in Cambridge University, which is also another good idea. But it's also kind of moving in that direction as to towards something that's more helpful and more sustainable to everyone. But I think that ultimately we have to, at some stage, at some point in our species timeline, you know, we're going to have to say, okay, enough is enough for money, because this is actually just causing more problems than it solves. You know, at the end of the day, we just want to have, want people to have all the basics of living. You know, that should be like an obvious thing to have in the 21st century. You know,
I mean, it's ridiculous
that you have to pay to fucking live on this in the 21st century. It's absolutely absurd. And I think most people don't even realize how absurd that is. You know, it's so fucking easy to make stuff now. And, you know, and then yet we say, okay, no, you have to buy your fucking block of cheese, or you have to buy your whatever it is that you want to eat just to survive, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we could do all this stuff for free just by reorganizing things. But I don't think we're ready for that quite yet, but I think that's, we are getting there, you know, and I think we're on that road. Mm. ShareBay, by the way, is one of many types of sites, actually. It's not just ShareBay. There are many other ones, like Olio, for example, is an app where people share food. We have Gratix, which is another big one in Spain. These are all apps. FreeCycle, of course, which you'll know in the States. And there's a whole plethora of them. I have a list somewhere of about 100 of them. So it kind of shows that there is that sort of intention out there for people to actually find alternative ways of getting stuff and getting stuff done.
Colin, as I'm listening to you speak, I see that my brain is getting this vibration of, if people that are at the top of the food chain are happy with things are going, why the fuck would there be even a shift for change? Because in the end, it's the, like you talked about, the cleaners, the burger flippers, like, to what degree do we actually have a say?
A huge amount, much, much more than we believe. I mean, I think a lot of people sort of suffer the delusion that the government and the establishment is everything, and we are just like sucking off the tit of that somehow. But I think it's completely the other way around. I think that we are actually in control. We're just not organized. We're just not aware of the power that we have, because everything that the government administers or sees to is related to how we're consuming the things that we are consuming. Mm. So if we stopped consuming tomorrow, for example, the government goes out of business immediately, you know, so because they've got nothing to do. So I think that we have to assume that power of our own. And I think for too long, we've had suffered this illusion that we actually are powerless, but we're not powerless at all. Once we just organize in our communities and organize online in whatever ways we can. And I think the only way to organize in any real way that actually hurts the establishment is through economically, is through finding alternative economic means to do things. Mm. Because at the end of the day, every society, every civilization is based on its economy. You know, I mean, it's like I always say, like people set up a village when there's water to when there's land to to work the land or something like that. I mean, people gather together for economic purposes, you know? It's the same reason why people go to cities. People live in cities for economic reasons, you know? Most people don't really want to live in cities. But it's basically, we're motivated by economy first, and then society is something that kind of happens after, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if we want to change society, well, we have to start by changing the economy. We should start by changing the way we think about how we get the things that we need and how we do things for other people, you know? And of course, you know, I mean, slowly, it's not going to happen overnight, of course. But if people can start finding alternative means of providing free goods and services little by little, over time, the people will build confidence in that idea and it'll become more like couch surfing, for example. Couch surfing is a great example of, you know, at one time, all you could ever do was go and stay in a hotel somewhere. You know, you had to pay money for that. But couch surfing stopped all that. Going to say, well, look, you can stay in someone's house for free and you can meet some cool people. You can have a nice time. And so that was a way of disrupting the model. But we need to disrupt the day-to-day economic model in any way we can.
Yeah. It's funny how when one disrupts the model, government finds ways of regulating and again, enforcing what they need back again. So, I mean, it's a cat and mouse game.
It's like cops and robbers, you know? Yeah. People say that cops are chasing the robbers, but I don't know, the robbers are the ones who invent the crimes, you know, and then the police have to go and clean up the crimes or whatever. We're the ones who instigate the methodology of society, and they're the ones who are kind of trying to regulate it. And of course, they come along and take the credit for it afterwards, you know. So we saved the economy X, Y, Z, and all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, in some ways, politicians really don't do anything except just come up with a photo opportunity and take credit for whatever thing happened anyway, because it was going to happen already, you know.
We fucking
made it happen, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
Stupid, you know, like a politician goes, I mean, people build a bridge and a politician comes and opens the bridge and it takes a photo. You say, look, I opened the bridge. He fucking didn't do anything with the bridge. You know, it's nothing to do with him at all. You know, it was so fucking mass delusion, really.
Yeah. You know what I find interesting, going back a little bit to Bambos's comment, is I was in the U.S. for the last 2 months, and anything that has any tint of a social support of anything all of a sudden gets categorized as communist or socialist. It's just so fascinating for me how quickly the label is used to categorically discount anything that might support people that are underserved. Like it's fascinating for me.
It's absolutely, Chris. And it's really, really bad in the States, and much more so than anywhere else, really. I mean, you guys have been so fucking brainwashed since, you know, Cold War, since after the war, basically, and the Cuba crisis and all that sort of stuff, is that communism is evil, 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 and all that sort of stuff. And it's terrible, really, because it just stops anyone coming up with any sort of constructive idea that might look like communism, and then it's just going to be laughed at our court, you know?
Yeah, and the whole idea is once you throw out the word, then there's no discourse around what might make sense. It just becomes a slavish use of identity, and that's basically where the U.S. is. A lot of places are, but the U.S., this identity politics. If I identify you as a communist or a socialist or a conservative, then all of a sudden I can discount everything you say. So it's really a sick environment, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, we have this huge problem with symbology in every way, I suppose, you know, where people identify as X and then you have people who are Y and they hate the person who identifies with X. And this is kind of something that's a bit of a kind of a human vulnerability, I suppose. So, I mean, you could say the same with Democrats and Republicans, really. I mean, they're not a huge lot of difference really between them. And yes, if you're a Democrat, you must hate the Republicans. If you're a Republican, you must hate the Democrat. It's all just a fucking waste of energy, really.
It is, totally. And all the while, all the things that are important go ignored and nothing happens.
I remember reading once recently that I think that every bill that passes through Congress is like usually about 600 or 700 pages or something like that. Is that correct? So if you want to,
massive.
If you want to pass a bill for something, the senators, they basically lump in all their little pet local projects in and all, and it becomes this completely untenable document just with gibberish,
and then,
basically.
And then they use it as a tactic because then they say, you're rejecting giving financial support to people that were at 9/11. You're the worst, you know, not saying we're rejecting the 80% of the spending, which has nothing to do with them. So it becomes very, very ugly. Basic human income. What are your thoughts on it?
I think as a means to getting to a post money world, I don't think it's a viable option. I think it can help people right now in this current system, and it is helping people with in some countries with the COVID. But in general, if we want to move to a post money economy, then I don't think giving people free money is a way to do that. Really, no.
No.
I mean, I've written quite a few articles about that actually on the universal basic income, which is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And well, I just don't see that any transition, because in a way it will make us more reliant on money. Like I was talking earlier about sucking off the tit of government. Yeah.
It doesn't change.
It's going to make us even much more clingier than that, you know?
It doesn't change consumerism in that sense.
No, it certainly doesn't change consumerism. And of course, you're not solving the problem of becoming self-reliant, and you're not solving the problem of seeing is there anything else past money, you know? And you're in some ways, you're making it worse, I suppose. You're just saying, well, money is the only thing. And now that money is easy to get or it's free to get, then it's still... You're never going to look past that.
It supports the same system.
Yeah, and of course you have inflation as well. I mean, anyone who thinks that there isn't going to be massive inflation with free basic income is I don't know what they're thinking.
What they're smoking. They're smoking because they're spending their money on the free basic income on weed. Raul, who is my accountant, he also has a point which I want to discuss. I don't know if this is the exact point, but I'll use it for that. Is it time that robots start to pay taxes? Missed change since first industrial revolution. We had to compete with machines back then, plus income tax for all. So basically, that's when we instituted income tax. People don't realize that it wasn't that we always paid income tax. There was a day when all of a sudden the government said, let's just see if we can sneak this one in, you know, and then it just added and added and added and added. But the whole point then is that basically while we're being taxed, we're competing against machines, and that's been a progressive state. So what are your ideas there?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the main source of government income would have been VAT. Do you have like value-added tax probably there? I don't actually have a problem with tax per se. I mean, I think it's, you know, in this system, the way we are living now, I think it's, you know, you have to have money to administer government. I'm saying in this system, obviously, if we have a post money system, it's a different thing. But a lot of people are object to tax, and I suppose if you're going to
it's
not very nice.
I guess there was the other topic which was added to this, which is that we tax companies that use the robots and say you pay a tax because in lieu of that, someone isn't getting a job. That's the I guess the question.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not really something I've ever thought about, I suppose. I mean, you could imagine that maybe it would be fairer, I suppose, if a company is using less human employment, but they're creating more profit as a result, that maybe they should be taxed more. I suppose just tax more in profit. If you tax more in profits, capital tax, capital gains tax, or whatever, you know, it amounts to the same thing. If somebody is automating their factory or whatever, and they're going to be making more money because they're not paying staff and healthcare and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe, potentially they can be taxed through their profits. I don't know what the corporate profit system is like in the States. Don't know anything about it. I know it's very low in Ireland, for example. But
I've seen a lot of business people speaking to this subject, because I mean, I think the thing that people don't understand, especially wealthy people, which is kind of funny, is there's a paradox that they don't quite get, is your money is only valuable in a society which is sustainable. Because you could make a lot of money, then, you know, Bolalong has often joked about this, that if you make a lot of money in a country that has a large disparity of wealth, then you have to build bigger and bigger fences to protect yourself from those that can't afford that same lifestyle.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's all this prosperity that we've brought in since like the 50s. So the consumerist prosperity has all been siphoned off into the smaller and smaller group of people. And of course, it has created a higher level of general prosperity. I don't think there's anyone would be in any doubt of that. But it's still far too easy for people to fall between the cracks nowadays, even this stage. And I don't know, in the States, it's particularly bad, all right, with the you know the, all this mess over the stimulus checks and the lack of money that basically that the states have been paying for the COVID, for example. So it's shocking to think that in this day and age that can happen in a country like America, you know, that, people can go through the cracks so easily.
When I was in L.A., because I was in L.A. and every day I would take a little bit of a day trip just to drive 30 to 40 minutes just to check out something new. And I encountered so much homelessness. So basically, you could look under any bridge. So as you're driving under any bridge, you'll have encampments of, say, 20 or 30 people on either side, which is just its little village for the homeless.
Fuck.
And that's all over the place. It's not one area. So it's mind-blowing that that level of homelessness can exist and the system has no way to deal with it. Absolutely. No. Yeah. And I think like when we looked at pictures during the Great Depression and you saw those lines of, you know, those lines of people waiting for soup and so on. And those like now it's a bit interesting, like media, you don't see half covered the amount of poverty that's existing today against what existed then, which was so much more. You know, there was so much, it was as if everyone was doing their best to try to help those people. Now it's so common, they don't even give it a second thought. It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is crazy. Like, I mean, this is one of the things I nearly always open up with when I'm starting a speech or something like that, is like that we are in the 21st century and why the hell are the basic necessities of life not free? You know, I mean, it's crazy to think that, you know, I mean, it was... We can solve all these problems very, very easily, but we just don't want to. And that's it. That's basically it.
That's it.
And until we want to, you know, that's not very much is going to change, you know. And that's why I think that it's really important that people get on things like ShareBay and start making new types of economy possible, you know, because that's the only way ultimately going to solve these problems. Because, of course, we can't all be billionaires and millionaires. I mean, that's not going to work either. And that would be a terrible idea, you know, because I wrote an article once called The Tragedy of 10 Billion Ferraris, which is kind of an interesting article. And charts the idea of, we say a communist society can't work. Okay, what's the absolute logical extreme opposite and say, okay, everyone has Ferraris, you know, everyone has a mansion and all this sort of stuff.
You get a car.
Has to be red though.
Yeah, exactly. Just to have the full stereotypes.
I think it's the opposite, and we all kind of we have this sort of unconscious idea that we're all going to be rich, that we're all going to have this amazingly successful lifestyle. At least that's what's promoted to us all day. You know, that you have to be, you have to be this side of this type of person, you know, this was it.
And, or you're not successful. So where do you go from here? So what's your next thing that kind of keeps you active and excited?
Well, the next, I've actually just started a new video series on YouTube called Versavice, which is a very, to cut a long story short, it's a general video channel. I'm not really solely talking about post money or future economy. I'm not really talking about that only. I'm talking about lots of different topics because I have other interests in sort of human behavior generally and that sort of stuff. So I'm currently doing a video at the moment about criticism, for example, about how to advice on how to give good criticism to people, because I think it's something that people often don't do very well and they end up insulting people, which is not always helpful.
I know it so well. How did you think my wife did? How did you think my wife did before the last show? What did you think when I shared that story before you came on?
Are you open to some feedback? That's like I'm going to fucking smack you in the mouth now. Exactly. You know, it's like... starting off saying, but please don't take this the wrong way.
Bro. Yeah, exactly. Please don't take this the wrong way. We could come up with the five statements. In fact, what we should, if you're up for it, we can book another show and then have it on criticism, because I'd love to do a whole show on that as well.
Wow, yeah, absolutely. That's
a great subject.
Are you going to survive after this show when he goes downstairs to his wife?
Yeah, she's not listening.
Oh, that's terrible. She doesn't even listen to the show. My goodness.
No, she hasn't read one of my books either. Like, she really just does not care at all. She's in finance, right? She's got a whole different idea of what's important.
Yeah.
I have to plug the videos. It's funny because I really enjoyed one of the videos and I can't remember what it was. There was basically what I really appreciated in it. I know the generality was that you said the 10 things that, and then you did it in a way that was very crisp and precise. So I watched the whole video, which I often don't because I'm bored in the middle. And it was just really good. Do you even remember what the title was of that video?
It's called The 10 Shocking Facts About Society That We Consider Perfectly Normal. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Number 10, we divide our common planet into small sections, then fight over who owns which section. Okay, like nothing in history has ever created more war and conflict than borders and tribalism. I mean, of course, it's not unreasonable to defend your patch, right? But almost no war or conflict in the past has ever been about defending your patch, but more about the greed and ego of leaders. Number 9, we send children to school for their entire childhood to learn facts and skills that most of them will never use. I mean, we don't all get to be doctors and scientists, right? Who ever used a quadratic equation outside school that wasn't a scientist? Shouldn't we spend all that time putting kids into education to teach them things like how to communicate well, how to deal with their own emotions, how to cooperate with others, how to solve problems and handle conflict? Wouldn't that kind of stuff be more useful? Number 8, there are thousands of religions in the world, each one believing that their one is the right one and all others are wrong. I mean, this is like the second biggest cause of war and conflict in the world. Our like adherence to symbols and unsubstantiated beliefs about the afterlife. I mean, they can't all be right, can they? But they could all be wrong. Number 7, an inventor can invent something really useful, then forcibly prevent other people from using it. I mean, human ingenuity knows no bounds. We are amazingly inventive. But when we invent something, we're overcome with this urge to protect it with patents to stop or prevent other people from using it. I mean, I'm sure the guy who invented the wheel all those years ago wasn't bludgeoning his co-workers to stop them from using it. I'm sure he was just happy that he was making everyone's lives better. Why don't we do that? Number 6. We abuse and kill over 100 million animals every day for food, even though we can get our nutrition in other ways. Okay, you don't have to be a vegan to wonder about this. 100 million animals every day? I mean, most people say that they love animals, so why eat them if you don't have to? I mean, there's so much information out there now on plant-based nutrition that there's really not much excuse. And of course, it's great for the planet too. Like, the third biggest cause of climate change is animal agriculture. Number 5, we prioritize money and the economy over clean air, water, and food quality. I mean, in one word, oil. Like, for decades, we've known about the harm that oil causes, but we never stopped using it. Why? Even plastic, which is like an oil-derived product, it's great, but it's not so great in our oceans and in our food supply. But we're still using it? Number 4, we call some people soldiers, which makes it okay for them to kill other people. I mean, thou shalt not kill, right? This is universally accepted in every culture and religion around the world. But strangely, if you wear a certain type of uniform or dress, then that's okay? I mean, of course, no one argues that self-defense is a bad idea. I mean, it's either you or them. But shooting up hospitals and unarmed civilians with rockets? Number 3, everyone wants to save the planet, but no one wants to talk about consuming less. I mean, we all look to governments to fix our problems for us, to fix the planet, but maybe we should just go and look in the mirror a little bit. I mean, consumerism is the number one cause of climate change, and it's caused by, you guessed it, consuming things. I mean, until we're ready to talk about reducing our intake and our consuming habits, then there's not really that much government is going to be able to do. Number two, we see compassion as a sign of weakness, even though it's essential to our existence and well-being. This is like the number two most shocking fact. Why? Because it's so important and so overlooked. I mean, take away all the moms in the world and what have you got left? Not very much. How long would humanity last if we didn't have that kind, nurturing influence in our lives? I mean, all the behavioral science is in on this. You take away love and compassion from a child and you get bad results. And finally, number one, we use an economic system that facilitates the death of millions of people every year. This one really caps the can. Here we are in like the 21st century with all this incredible technology at our fingertips, yet we can't seem to look after the 3 million or so children that die from malnutrition and curable diseases every year. And the reason? Well, there isn't one. I mean, the need is there, the resources are there, the technology is there to do it, but it just doesn't pay.
That's actually just only a couple of weeks old, actually, that video. And that's kind of like, again, it's on this kind of general theme, although I did sort of finger money a little in that one, but it's kind of trying to set up a general theme for a general audience, I suppose, and trying to pose questions that maybe aren't things that aren't questioned enough. So I have a whole plethora of videos to get through. Last week's one I did was about social media. I'm just trying to do one a week at the moment. One was about social media and how it's polarizing society, that the left is going more left and the right is going more right, and then there was this ridiculous going on. And the reason for that, as basically I was saying in the video, is that because most people on social media who are politically motivated, they just post their political opinion without any context or without any explanation as to why they believe or agree with such a thing. And so what happens is you just have like one opinion, aspiring opinions on these threads, you know, and I mean, it's like, the flat earth is a great example of that. You know, like, I believe the world is flat and no, the world is this or whatever, you know, and it's just these sparring opinions who has actually nothing to do with the people that are actually giving those opinions. And that's what I think is.
And I think the beauty is if you engage any more deeply, if you say, hey, what would you say? You'd say, can you help me understand what made that you came to this conclusion? Like that would be seen as an act of aggression. Cause now it's like, what? What? It's not obvious. You know, like,
you'll be blocked.
There's not even the space for the dialogue in that. And once you've gone to the opinion, it's like either you believe me or you're an asshole. Yep. It's just one or the other.
It's like that. Yeah. I mean, it's become hyper aggressive, really. I mean, Twitter is especially bad because, of course, you only have a certain amount of characters, you know? So you want to load that. You load your fucking tweets. I mean, I've done it myself with the maximum characters of whatever loaded opinion that I want to foist onto the world, you know? And it's... And it becomes like I think described in the video, that we kind of become avatars of our belief rather than actual people. You know, we lose our humanity and just become these warring opinions.
Yeah.
And eventually someday the fucking nukes are going to go off because of all this.
Because we're so stupid. We've brainwashed ourselves. These bureaucracies, you know, this morning I had a beautiful interaction with PayPal. I bought something that turned out to be fraudulent. I stopped payment on it, and then I went back to PayPal and said, listen, I stopped payment on this. And then PayPal took the money back, and they said, you didn't follow our policy. We're supposed to take the money back, not your bank, right? So I laughed, and I kind of wrote back the email. I said, so help me understand this. One, I sent you a video of what was advertised. Two, I sent you a video of what was sent. Three, it's obvious that fraud was committed. Four, so now you're telling me that because I wanted to stop the fraud from occurring, you're punishing me? And then five, can you do me a favor? Now that you know that this is fraud, can you send it to your legal department? And then,
oh my goodness.
And then tell me that you recognize it as fraud and that you're not going to refund me so that I can escalate this. Because clearly, it's almost like the service center is so stupid. Because they said, oh, we no longer follow logic anymore and reason. We have a protocol, And if that protocol isn't filled out, then it falls into the bucket of, oh, we just reject it.
Absolutely. And, and of course, like so many of those websites now, like Facebook, they try and automate as much of the moderation and the sort of administration of the site as possible. So you don't, you can't get to talk to a human being at all, you know?
Yeah.
And of course, in most cases, if you could speak to a human, you'd solve it in a couple of seconds, you know?
In a couple of seconds. I went to Facebook, the same thing you said. I went to Facebook because that's where I saw the advertisement. And then they didn't have any way to contact them. So then what do you do? You have to do the most absurd thing. You go to the email address to then have to make it more like I am now naming a fraud on your account. I need you to recognize that you are enabling fraud on your account. Here are the videos. And then, I mean, it's like, why do I have to go to this extreme make it so that you take responsibility? But if they're making money, because you know, the people that are frauding are paying for a lot of advertising. Yeah. So they're making a lot of money on the back end. So what, they don't have a big incentive to try to nip this in the butt.
In general, most big companies now, even, you know, the ones, if you have a problem with your telephone company or something like that, you can't get to speak to a human being. You get to talk into a talking robot or whatever, and you're left listening to hold music. It's awful that really that's come to that. You're paying for a service, but you're not really getting any service at all. They don't want to talk to you at all costs, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Everyone that they have to talk to us is a charge. We leave. We're coming to the end of our hour, and Bolalan, who brought us together, has said we should have the use of what we want and not ownership of it.
Sure. Yeah. Usership. Yeah. It's a great idea.
It's a great idea.
I don't know who came up with that term, but the idea of usership. And I suppose ShareBay is kind of like a library of sorts, you know, that it's not just for giving stuff, but also for lending and borrowing as well. So that's good. And it's nice to see some people lending and borrowing tools and equipment there on that. It's nice.
So with that, we thank Bolalan for bringing us together.
Yes. Thank you, Bolalan.
Bolalan, he's certainly a call-in file. He's mentioned you on several occasions to us on several different episodes. So he's a champion for your activity. You should be paying him a royalty like I should, because he's been supportive as me to as he has been to you.
So. I think I owe him at least one honor, I think.
yeah. In fact, that's true. I owe him an honor as well.
Okay, I think I'll go and do that right now.
Sorry about that, Bolalan. I haven't honored you yet. That'll come. Yes. Thank you, Colin. And then we have our next episode. I'll call you and we'll set up a date for that.
I'd love to talk to you guys again. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. It's great fun. And I love the lightheartedness of your approach. It's really, really nice. And it's great and very enjoyable conversation. So thanks very much.
Yeah, great talking to you. Yeah. All the best. Bye.
Bye-bye. Ciao.
That was fun. It's nice to take a subject that can be totally heavy and just a little, like, bring it back down to earth again.
I learned a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. I can understand why Bolalan is so appreciative of his work.
Does he have a website with all his links?
I believe I saw something, but I can't be sure. But we'll put that in the chat as well. Nice. But if you haven't, just to recap, ShareBay is where you'd go to see where you can offer and receive services for free online as an exchange.
Yeah.
Not as an exchange, as you give just for the act of giving, and it's just through that process that other people give in return. And HonorPay, which was the site where you can honor people that have done or acted in ways that you want to show appreciation towards.
Beautiful.
So that's that. It was really nice. We see you then tomorrow.
On
a
wonderful
chaos.
It's a wonderful chaos. We like it down.